Good evening, everyone. My name is Ellen Murphy. I have the distinct honor of welcoming you here tonight and giving a little introduction. And I think the reason, I guess, that I've been given that honor is that I had an experience in Bellingham for Veterans Day in which I distributed information about depleted uranium at the recruiting center and was arrested for criminal trespass. And that reminds me of Ann Hall. She's not here by any chance, is she? Well, welcome out, Ann. And Jean, you're still in there, but we're with you, right? Jean Buskin. Well, it was a 3-day trial. I was convicted, and we are going to appeal it. But the wonderful thing is that out of that trial has come a tremendous amount of communication. The thing that thrilled me more than anything was that I started getting calls from veterans. Veterans who felt that the action and the resulting trial was giving them a voice. The wilderness isn't only in the countries that we make war on. The wilderness is here in our own country. And so our veterans are coming forth, and their voices from the wilderness as well. Let's see, what else do I want to say? So we will have some veterans here tonight who will speak from the heart and what I've experienced as a counselor and therapist. And it says on the program I'm a veteran counselor. Not quite true. I'm a chemical dependency counselor, and I have worked with many veterans over the years. And that's why I chose Veterans Day to do the action, because it was the only way that I could think of, the best way to honor veterans for Veterans Day was to warn them about the toxic battlefield that we left there and that we're making even more toxic now. You'll hear much more about that as the night goes on. But when, I'm sorry. So when people speak from their heart, it's a sacred space. We're in a church already, which I presume to be a sacred space in its own way, but I think what really makes a sacred space is when people speak from their heart. And then I just had a couple of comments I wanted to make about the fact that this is nothing new, the toxic battlefield, and I know that you all know that. Most people do know that. That back in the 43 to 63, there were 300,000 military personnel who, without their knowledge or consent, were exposed to incredibly high amounts of radiation. They had to fight for their rights, too. They had to form organizations, the Atomic Veterans Association, radiation victims, all kinds of organizations. And then there were the vets, tens of thousands of vets exposed to Agent Orange, and now we have 400,000 who were exposed to depleted uranium, so-called depleted uranium, in the Gulf War. So it's nothing new, and when I think, you know, about DU, that's something that's often been used against the vets by the Veterans Administration and the Pentagon. It means diagnosis unsubstantiated. So let's change DU to not divide, which is the D, but unite, which is the U. Thank you. Now it is my distinct pleasure to I was going to ask if I could change the order, but I better not rebel. To introduce to you Alvin Clark, our first speaker. He is 6 years Army, 7 years National Guard, 8 months Desert Storm active duty. He's originally from South Carolina. Now he lives in Tacoma. He's married to Anita and has his 3 children, Carmel, Benny, and Sean. And I am very honored to introduce Alvin.
First of all, I thank God for being here, and I thank the people that had invited me to be here to speak tonight as a veteran. As was told, I spent 8 months at Desert Storm. I was stationed at the Port of JaVale, and my job was transportation. So we were responsible for the soldiers getting their supplies, their vehicles, their food, and anything else that they needed. I went over there as a healthy young soldier. I came back a totally different soldier. I got sick immediately when I got back, and I stayed sick. I got back in June of 1991, and I stayed sick until they did something, until 1994. And when I say sick, I mean sick. I almost died. They sent me to numerous places to get tested. They sent me to Walter Reed. They sent me to Bethesda, Maryland, and nobody could find out what was wrong. And in the meantime, I was getting sicker and sicker. My family didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to do. And the Army didn't know what to do. So, in the meantime, I was getting sicker, and I had a doctor that was stationed at Madigan Hospital that decided that the only thing that was left to do was a bone marrow transplant. In the meantime, the Army didn't want to pay for my sickness. The National Guard didn't want to pay for my sickness because I was active duty when I went over there. And I'm just here to say that it's so much goes on behind the scene that we as people don't see. If you hadn't been there to go through it, or if you hadn't actually met someone that have went through it like myself, then you don't know what you are missing. I had to fight. I was investigated. My family was fit through turmoil. They thought I was trying to get Army money from the military or from the government. And in the meantime, I'm dying. So the things sometimes that you see on the outward appearance is not necessarily what's behind the scene. My family had to go through. My wife had to take off 8 months from work to take care of me. After the bone marrow transplant, I had a relapse and had to go back into the hospital. I almost died. In fact, they say I did die on the table, I mean in my bed. But I'm here today because of the grace, the prayers, and the support of people that really care. Now that's not everybody, because everybody really don't care for the soldiers. It's just a known fact. I'm a living witness of that. But the people need to wake up. We as people, we as soldiers, we as soldiers' families, we need to wake up and look at what's behind the scene and not just what you see with your natural eye. Because everything that you see with your natural eye is not really what's going on. Things happened to me over there. We was in stuff that y'all couldn't see. I'm quite sure some of you might have family over there now. I have family over there in the war that's going on right now. I know they can't email me. I know they can't write and tell me everything that's going on because I couldn't do it. But we need to really look, because what you see on TV is not necessarily what's actually going on. I've been there. I know. So the support, what we got going on here, Ellie, when she called me, I was really stunned, because I don't feel like I'm way up here to be here, but I'm willing to help whatever way I can help. And I told Ellie that. I said, I don't mind speaking, because I've been through it. Whatever I can do to help someone that's in there, over there, going through. Because I talked to a lot of people when I got back from Desert Storm. You got a lot of people that's scared. They don't know what to do. They don't know where to turn. They scared if they go this way, they'll get in trouble with their unit that they in. If they go to this way, they don't know if they're going to lose their wife, their kids, their home, their jobs. I was speaking at one engagement. This police officer lost everything. His wife, his home. He had to move back home with his family because of the sickness that he got over there. But we just need to just remember that whatever we see with the natural eye is not always true. You need to really look at behind the scenes. Talk to the veterans. Talk to people that's been went through this. Talk to the families. Don't lose in contact with people. I really support the veterans. I'm a veteran, and I'm glad to be a veteran. But sometimes we get deceived. So if I can say anything, I would ask that you really support, in whatever way you can, the veterans that's over there now, even when they return, the families of the ones that have lost family members there. And I just pray that whatever happens, happens for a good cause and not a bad cause. Because it's a really sad thing to turn on your TV and see innocent people getting killed for a reason that I feel should never take place. It's many ways of dealing with things, and I never thought war was one of them. We sign up. We don't sign up to be intended to go into war. You sign up because you want to be part of the country. You really want to do something for the country you live in. But that don't have to be war. When I signed on the dotted line, I never thought I'd be in a war. When I came back, I really thought that my government was behind me. I went through a lot. I carried my family through a lot. But my wife and my kids stood by me through it all. And if she had left me, I wouldn't have mattered. Because I knew what I was putting her through. And all because the country that I was trying to defend didn't try to defend me. They put the commercials on the television. You bleed them. Look deeper. Look behind the scene. And just remember that what you see on the outside is not necessarily what's going on. Thank you for this time.
Welcome.
Thank you, Alvin.
Our next speaker is Dana Briggs. Quite a different experience. Dana is an Air Force Academy graduate. He served in other places in different parts of the world, Europe, Middle East, Central America, United States. 1978 to 1988. He's a member of Veterans for Peace and Amnesty International. Welcome, Dana.
Good evening, everybody. It's an honor to be up here with these veterans, with all the veterans that are sitting out in the audience, and for all of you that decided to take your time to come out this evening and listen to us and to the other speakers. Can you hear me now? Yes, my experience was somewhat different from most people's. I grew up in a military family during the time of John Wayne movies and just wars like World War II. My father was a retired Marine Corps Sergeant Major who fought in World War II, Korea, and nearly part of Vietnam. My mother was a Korean War veteran. My younger brother subsequently became a Gulf War veteran, the first Gulf War, in naval aviation. And the expectation was that I would follow in the family business. I did my job so well that in 1974 I had appointments to all five military academies, West Point, Annapolis, Air Force, Merchant Marine, and the Coast Guard. Decided to choose the Air Force because at the time, being a young, impressionable 19-year-old, I thought it was the better deal. And when I went into the academy with a lot of expectations, and having been weeded through literally thousands of people who were supposed to go to these things, I started a 4-year odyssey at that point to become a professional warrior. Ultimately, the thing that you need to understand about this military and any other military, and what 4 years of my training and then 10 years of active duty after that boils down to, is one simple sentence. All militaries exist to kill and destroy. Period. There is no other reason for a military to exist. During the time that I was a cadet, we were taught an honor code that's basically stated, I will not lie, cheat, nor steal, nor tolerate those among us who do. My expectation was, coming out of the academy in 1978, is that if I had to live up to an honor code as part of a professional warrior class, that those who would ask me to go and put my life on the line to protect everybody else would also live by the same honor code. In reality, what I found out was most of the people who ask you to put your butt and your life on the line lie, cheat, and steal. And they tolerate those who do. We went through a lot of training during that time, and another oath that we took upon commissioning in 1978 was, among other things, as a young officer, that I would support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Foreign and domestic. The interesting thing is that I never took an oath to defend the credibility of any president of the United States. During the 10 years that I was on active duty, which, as Ellen mentioned, ranged from Europe to the Middle East to Central America, yes, I was in combat. I was in combat in things that people generally don't know about, except in rumors that to this day I can't, in all honesty, talk about in detail. But there's things that you need to know about combat, and it doesn't matter whether it's the current conflict or whether it's ones of the past. These are not video games. These are not John Wayne movies. And the closest thing that you'll come to seeing something is probably Saving Private Ryan, with one major part missing. There is a stench to war, a smell to war, whether it is exploding ordnance, oil wells on fire, or rotting bodies on the battlefield. It is something that you, I hope, will never have to experience, and it's things that people who do never forget. Among many other things that we were taught about was what the rules of the game were. And the rules of the game, believe it or not, are embodied in international law, with things such as the Geneva Conventions, the Constitution, and military law. My estimation is that this current conflict is nothing new. It didn't just spring out of, to put it politely, the misguided attempts of the current administration. What this is a long, continuing series of violations of international law, our own domestic laws, and the laws of whichever deity that you may happen to bow to. They go clear back prior to World War II. Every president since World War II, including FDR, is, in my estimation, and I'm just one citizen, guilty of a war crime in one form or another. When I went to my last duty assignment as the Chief Communications War Planner and Exercise Designer at the tender rank of a senior captain in my early 30s at United States Space Command in NORAD in Colorado Springs, with all the things that I had seen, and probably the straw that broke the camel's back was sitting in war exercises inside of Cheyenne Mountain at 3 o'clock in the morning, and discussing the potential ramifications of what I consider to have been the greatest act of terrorism ever perpetrated upon the human race, which was 50 plus years of the Cold War with a nuclear threat hanging over our heads. And one of the discussions we had was, what were acceptable losses in the nuclear strike scenario? What was the collateral damage that would be acceptable? And depending upon the scenario, acceptable losses were considered to be 20 to 80 million people. For me, that was the straw that broke the camel's back, plus the Reagan administration. And I resigned my commission in 1988. Woo! In the 15 years since then, I have been appalled and outraged at what I consider to be the dereliction of the leadership of this country when it comes to how they take care of individuals such as Alvin and the other two that are sitting up here, and those of you that have been out in the audience that were veterans. I have been appalled that even though I know that the Geneva Conventions say that we're not supposed to parade POWs in front of the TV, and there's arguments back and forth whether their pictures should be put in the newspapers, regardless of whether they are Iraqi or U.S., that every one of us that has been alive since 1941 has, in fact, been a prisoner of war. Every one of us. This country has been on a continuous series of conflicts, which for the most part had been for absolutely no valid reason whatsoever. My final words to you is that for anybody who questions your so-called patriotism, and especially if you didn't wear a uniform, there are many ways to defend a society. Every one of us in our own way does, I honestly believe, the best that we possibly can do to defend our society. We're all defenders, and every one of us, including me, when it comes to this particular conflict, is a conscientious objector. I want to thank all of you for having come out tonight. Keep the faith. It's going to be a long struggle. Okay. Good health, safe travels, and may each of you find the happiness that you deserve. Thank you.
Sure that everyone can sense the tremendous courage that's up here in this little row of people here. Our next veteran is Brandy Mitchell. She's from Bellingham. She was in the Navy. She was in the Mediterranean on the USS Puget Sound from 93 to 95. And then from 96 to 97, she was a hospital corpsman on the Kitty Hawk, called an AVT, in Desert Storm. And so she was in Desert Storm and Desert Shield. So, you know, a corpsman, well, she'll tell you, but it's working in the medical field. And it is my great honor to welcome and introduce a very courageous lady, Brandy Mitchell.
Hello, my name is Brandon Mitchell, and I joined the Navy back in 93, and I resigned in 97. Yeah, 97. Excuse me, 98. Sorry. And I was taking care of many people during that time. When I went to Washington, I joined a squadron at that time, and we went to the Gulf. We were there for 6 months. I was 6 to 8 months. Oh, and then we began to notice that people were sick in my particular ship. And I also went to Saudi Arabia. went to two individual countries at that time. Sarah also went to... Well, the crew on the ship, when they came back after going to the countries, they all became ill. About two-thirds of the corpsmen became ill at that time. There were many people on ship at that time, and I was on the aircraft carriers. I took care of the individuals who were sick at that time. And I also became ill with meningitis. I conducted that from some of the individuals on board. And from that illness, I began to lose my hearing. It was because we were in contact with biological and chemical warfare at that time. And it was in that area that the elements were to be found. So we came in contact with health issues. From that time on, after the Gulf War, people today become ill because of those chemicals that are still in the area. It's on their, on the animals as well in the area. Now, for 2 years after that, I resigned from the Navy, and I became deaf. And that was from the illness that I contracted at that time. I was part of the military. The doctors, when I went to the VA hospital, they asked me many questions as opposed to what happened, whether I can hear or not. I continued to tell them that I didn't know that, why I couldn't hear, that you were the doctors who needed to tell me why I couldn't hear. For 2 or 3 months now, I've become worse with my health. It's declined further. I've had many migraines for these last few months. I still experience those headaches. I take various medications, a numerous amount. And there are different ones for different reasons. I once used my medication for pain control because of the poisons that caused the illnesses and the pains in my body. I feel pain in my bones. There are pains I experienced when I was growing up, but these are different kinds of pain than the growing pains you experience. These seem to be much deeper. right in the bones, it seemed like. I still can. Still shaking today. It makes it very difficult for me to sign. I'm shaking as well. And it's continuing for me. It's difficult for me to continue as well. I'm really not sure what else to say. But I'm having a hard time getting help from the VA hospitals. They tell me that there's nothing wrong with me. I go there, and they do spinal analysis, and I use CT analysis, as well as blood work. They use x-rays, hearing tests. And they tell me that there's nothing wrong with me, or that all the tests conflict with one another. So I really don't know what's wrong. But I know my health is continuing to deteriorate. And I can't really explain that to the doctors when I go to the VA. So now, when I go and see the doctor in Millennium, I see the doctors that are professionals. In neurology, a range of specialists I see. And it's hard for me to find that time to leave from home and to go see them. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Brandy. Our last veteran speaker is Indira Ray Chowdhury. She's a mom of two boys, a former JAG officer, military attorney in the Gulf War. She's a defender of the Constitution while it's still here. It's going to stay if she has anything to say about it, I'll tell you. Active duty, 1987 to 1992. She waited 10 years for her VA claim to be processed. She is a member of the National Lawyers Guild, a board member of the National Police Accountability Project, member of the ACLU, Amnesty International, and she practices law in Bellingham. Indira.
Someone I greatly admire once said, "I bring you a new commandment, to love your brother as I have loved you." Someone else I admire said, "A man cannot be a true believer until he wants for his brother what he wants for himself." Those two men were Jesus Christ and the Prophet Muhammad. This administration that we have here is one of the most hateful and deceitful administrations in the history of this country, and they are bringing this country down. I don't know if you realize this, but recently in the budget hearings, it's proposed that the VA budget be cut by $23 billion. B, billion dollars. The Medicaid budget is being cut by $93 billion. This is being done while young men are naively out there thinking that they're doing something for this country. This is being done when 72 million Americans are without health insurance. This is being done when this country's economy is at one of the worst points it's ever been. And at the same time, we're sending $5 million a day to support the state of Israel that stands in violation of more Security Council resolutions than any other country. We are committing genocide in Palestine, and it's our money that's paying for that. Just this morning, an international solidarity movement activist had his cheek blown off by an Israeli Defense Force soldier. And the Israeli Defense Force soldier that ran over Rachel Corey is back on duty with no punishment. This is what this administration is paying for. And this administration is looking at a situation in also which there's a 250,000 homeless veterans. This administration is looking at a situation where people like myself waited 10 years or more to get their claims. I waited 10 years for my claim. I had a brain tumor that I mysteriously developed during active duty. I wasn't treated for it by the military, and then I developed hepatitis C, and hepatitis C is the leading cause of liver transplants. They project that hepatitis C is going to, the deaths from that is going to exceed the deaths from AIDS in 2010. And I don't have any risk factors for hepatitis C. I'm not a drug user, nothing. I looked in my military folder, and lo and behold, it said that I was exposed to hepatitis. And they did not bother to tell me. And they did not pay for my therapy. My drugs cost $18,000. I had to pay for them out of my own pocket while I waited for this country to process my claim for 10 years. And it wasn't until Senator John McCain intervened that anything was done. And if it were up to them, I would have been dead. I would have been one of those 250,000 homeless veterans. And on top of that, right now it's taking them years to process claims. There's over 500,000 backlog VA claims. And at that point, while we're sending young men and women over there, he is cutting the VA budget by $25 billion so he can pay for the rich to get richer. And while he and his cronies are reaping rewards from the oil companies, from Halliburton, and all of that, and I'm outraged. And I hope you're outraged. And the war isn't just going on out there. We're losing our credibility. We are losing our credibility. We cannot say that we're for justice and democracy while people in Palestine are being oppressed, while people are being jailed and tortured without trial and murdered, and where they're being deprived of their homeland, where they're being deprived of the right to exist. We cannot lift our heads and be taken seriously when we do that. The rest of the world knows that we are the ones who supplied Saddam Hussein with any weapons of mass destruction, with any chemical weapons that he ever had. The United States supplied those to him when we wanted him to fight our war by proxy in Iran, against Iran, after we assassinated Mossadegh because he nationalized the oil company and then supported the Shah of Iran, who killed one out of 25 of his countrymen. And when the backlash and the blowback hit, we sent chemical weapons to Saddam Hussein. And now we're sending our young men and women to die to clean up the mess that we created. And the blowback from this war, you have no idea, but there's going to be a huge blowback. And the president of this country is willing to send this country to hell. He's willing to defy every Geneva Convention. He's willing to breach every international law. He is willing to have the United States despised around the globe. And make no mistake, that's what's happened. In order to carry out this agenda. And at the same time this war is being waged overseas, he's carrying out a war right here in your backyard. I'm sure most of you have heard of the USA Patriot Act. The Patriot Act that has resulted in 1,000 or more disappeared in the United States, where people of Islamic beliefs from countries throughout the world have been rounded up and detained without charge, where Ashcroft refuses to release the names or the identity or the locations of these people. We are in a mode where there is secret evidence and there are secret trials, where people are being detained as enemy combatants without the right to a lawyer, without the right to challenge that, and that doesn't stop. It doesn't stop there, because now we've got Patriot Act 2, the Domestic Security Act, where United States citizens can be stripped of their citizenship because John Ashcroft thinks that you're supporting in some kind of way some organization that he unilaterally deems is unacceptable. And that can be done retroactively. You can support someone in some kind of way, give a donation, and after that, they can declare, oh, by the way, now we don't like that group, they're a terrorist organization, and you've just lost your citizenship. That's what he is proposing. Right now, they are also proposing that they can search anybody, wiretap anybody, look at anybody's information for 15 days without any kind of notice or review. Right now, what they're doing is they're using administrative subpoenas and search warrants and looking through your financial information, looking at every book you read, looking at everything you write on the internet. And these are sealed and these are not subject to judicial review. I'm an attorney also, and I'm watching the Constitution fall apart before my very eyes. You are losing your freedom. Everything that we purport to stand for and everything we claim we don't like, detentions without cause, no representation, torture, we're doing it. We are doing it. We are the war criminals. The United States is dying, in my estimation. The Constitution is dying. And I thank you for showing up, because we need each and every one of you, each and every one of you, to be a warrior, to fight, to protect this country. This country is dying, and it's not from Saddam Hussein. It's from George Bush, John Ashcroft, Mr. Wolfowitz, Pearl, Cheney, Rumsfeld. And what I'd like to ask each and every one of you to do is stay educated. Obviously, you are, or you wouldn't be here, but there's a lot of people out there that aren't. I'm asking each and every one of you to go and look at what JINSA is. I'm asking each and every one of you to go and look at the general, the retired general that they propose head Iraq. The retired general that is a board, was a board member or supporter of JINSA, an extremist Zionist organization that supports Ariel Sharon. That is the person that they are proposing heads Iraq.
How do you spell JINSA?
J-I-N-S-A. And this is a part of the program for a new American century, PNAC. I hope you've all heard of it. It's an insidious and horrible document that was put together 12 years ago and signed by Wolfowitz, Cheney, and Rumsfeld and some other people. And that sets out a program of imperialistic domination and calls for the unilateral invasion of Iraq. And it is being carried out now by the same people who authored it. It's called PNAC. Just put a Google search and put PNAC, Program for a New American Century. And along with this general, by the way, Cheney and Wolfowitz, Pearl, they're all supporters of JINSA, all of them. Along with this, Mr. Woosley, who used to be head of the CIA, he's also going to participate. He's also a friend of Ariel Sharon. If you think that's going to be accepted in the Middle East, you're wrong. It's not. That is the kind of thing that's going on. And Mr. Woosley said one day, I heard him on television, one thing he said, the one truth that came out of his mouth was, the United States doesn't support democracies abroad. They're too hard to control. So what I would ask you, I appreciate all of you coming, and I appreciate your support, and I know all the veterans appreciate your support, but this country needs your support, no matter what the detractors say. So I ask you to educate yourself, look at what's going on, and do something about it, because pretty soon it's going to be too late. Thank you. Thank you.